Hello, and welcome to the second episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. If you haven't already, you should probably go back and listen to the very first episode, because today's episode is the second half of the conversation that Adele, Buck, and I had about the very first episode of Leverage, the Nigerian job. Well, yeah, that's about it. If you don't already know, this is a podcast that is going to be discussing each episode of the show Leverage on a bi-weekly basis. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the episodes. And without further ado, here is the second half of the Nigerian job. Out of a deep sleep. Yeah. And they're in the hospital, and he is handcuffed to a hospital bed.
As one does.
Exactly. I can't tell you the amount of times I've woken up in that exact situation.
It's iconic.
Yeah. And I think, I guess they're in like a small town. They're being kept in just two adjoining rooms. Not adjoining, but like rooms right next to each other.
Yeah.
And they're all cuffed to their beds or their chairs, but like, you couldn't have found four rooms to keep these criminals away from each other. But okay, because you kind of find out pretty
quickly. Well, come across is very bright in this particular one.
Yeah, they're kind of bumpkin-y.
Yeah.
Bumpkin-esque. So poor Nate is, you know, just been blown up, but now he has to get on the ball because they've already been processed.
Right.
And they need to find a way out because they don't want to go to jail. And also, we got to take down Dubenich.
Right.
So, but first he has to get everybody to trust him again and like have them all work together, because now they're still at each other's throats.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when he asks Parker if she trusts him, and she's just quiet for a minute. Like, the answer is implicitly yes, but then we get to hear why from Elliot. Like, of course, you're an honest man.
Right.
And he says it like truthfully, but also like a little tongue in cheek. He's like, yeah, you just helped us steal all this stuff, but you're an honest man. Like, there's no reason for you to screw us over.
Yeah. With a Chinese soupçon, sure, Jan.
Right. Sure, yeah. Jan. Yeah. But also, like, we don't have a choice right now. Like, if we don't trust you and do what your plan is, like, our plans are going to be, and we know this, are not going to work.
Right.
So Parker fakes a concussion and throws up, and they lift the phones of two different people. And like we were saying earlier, one of them is a flip phone, one of them is a smartphone. Mm-hmm. They slide one through to Nate. Hardison fakes up some papers, some proof that he is an undercover FBI agent.
Right. Of course he is.
Yeah. And then they use both Nate and Elliot to make the call to the policeman, like, more legitimate. Like, oh, I'm going to put you through to my supervisor.
Right.
And then there's the supervisor. Because, come on, surely no one's going to pull a con that just has one, has two guys.
Right.
And then they fax. In the commentary, they make a really big deal about saying that they really made an effort. If they wanted something cool they wanted to do something cool, like sending a fax from a phone, that they wanted to make sure that you could do that in real life.
Yeah.
Which I really like, that kind of attention to detail. I have no problem suspending my belief for shows like this, you know, like Ocean's 11, when they're like, oh yeah, this guy was in this little tiny box and then jumped around like this. I totally believe that. But I like that they made the effort to say, you know, we tested this out to see if it would work.
They did do that, but they also had a writer's room shorthand that came out of season one. They would say, is this black box or is it ledger? And what it referred to is in the Mile High job, they talked about the black box in an airplane. Mm-hmm. The air in-flight recorder is actually not black, it's orange.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually true.
Yeah.
My dad was an airline pilot. I happen to know this. And then in the bank job, they talked about the depository drawer, or not drawer, but
mm-hmm. open. The slot outside.
The slot being big
the
enough.
The night box, yeah.
The night box. But Parker could get into it because you had to have it be big enough to have accounting ledgers. put in it. That is, in fact, not true.
Yeah.
So they had this shorthand in the writer's room for stuff that is true but sounds implausible. Black box.
Yeah.
And not true but sounds plausible, which is Ledger.
I love that. Okay. Yeah. So they tell them that Hardison is actually like a deep cover FBI agent. And so they release the rest of the prisoners to his custody. And he has the thing where he like salutes them and they like salute him back. And he's like, what y'all do for this country? Just like lifts my heart or whatever, which is one of the many, many things that are just improv'd by Aldous Hodge, apparently.
Yes, he did do a lot of that. And what's also funny about it is that it's a great character choice for him from the get-go, that when he grifts, he does it a little too much.
Yeah.
He's always on the edge of getting found out for playing it just a little too glib.
Over the top, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can just imagine like Sophie watching later and she's like, oh gosh. Yeah. Dial it down. And he doesn't know how. Like,
no, he doesn't.
He gets better at it, obviously. But yeah, no, I love that because in that situation, like that's what those guys were craving. They're like, oh, we helped the FBI. Like, we did this thing. And then as soon as they're driving away, they're like, oh, we have a call from the state police for you. And they're like, what?
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute.
Uh-oh. We done wrong. And then like they have their car too. Like they took their police car. Where are they? They're back at Hardison's place, which is super nice.
Yes.
And they don't use it very long for a base.
No.
And it's not how I imagined Hardison's house looking. Like, that is not the computer setup of our hacker extraordinaire in my head. And now they decide to research this guy a little tiny bit. They realize that he's really screwed them over. He has the plans. They're going to have the shareholders meeting. And Nate's like, they're like, Elliot's pissed at him. Mm-hmm. He's like, you, how could you trust this guy? And he's like, oh, you guys trusted him because he came and told you that he was not a thief. If he told you he wanted to steal it, you wouldn't have trusted him. But because you thought you were stealing it back. And he's like, well, you're not a thief. Why'd you fall for it? And Hardison's just like, here, take these plane tickets. Please go to Rome, go to Paris. And Nate's like, no, we're going to turn this around. We're going to grift him. So I love the next part where he's like, Ellie's like, what's in it for me? And he says, you know, payback and money.
And a whole lot of money. And if we do it right, payback.
and Hardison's just like, I was just going to send 1,000 porno mags to his office, but I'm in. I just love, Hardison doesn't need like payback. He's just like, all right, this sounds fun. Okay.
Yeah. This is, I'm in for another one. Right.
Yeah. Like, let's go from the get go. And then he's like, all right, let's go get Sophie. And Elliot's like, what's a Sophie?
Hey, what's a Sophie?
Yeah, what's a Sophie?
And then we find out what a Sophie is.
Oh my gosh.
How much fun is she having playing the worst Lady Macbeth ever?
So do you think Sophie knows she's bad?
No.
At acting?
No.
Okay. I love that trope. And I can't think of another like a similar thing, but I love the idea of a born actress who becomes another character so well when she's grifting, not being able to act her way out of a paperback. Like,
yeah.
Like that's just like the most beautiful like juxtaposition ever.
Yeah. This is not her stage. This is the perfect encapsulation of it. Yeah.
And then we see right away what her stage is.
Right. You couldn't have brought Sophie in at the beginning because you needed the other three to trust Nate.
Yeah.
You know, based on that introduction.
I just love all of them watching her and they're like horrified. And then Nate is like mouthing the words.
Exactly. Right?
And he's just like, he's just enchanted.
Right. Right.
Because she's so bad and because she's Sophie, but he just loves how awful she is.
Yes. Well, and I think he loves how awful she is because he knows how good she can be.
Right. Yeah. And so he enjoys that juxtaposition as well.
Yeah. And their chemistry from the get-go is off the chain. It's just.
Oh, like. It is like sizzling and they're like in an alley, you know, and people are watching them and she like can't even look him in the eyes. She's like just staring at his mouth.
Right.
And yeah, so she's like, oh, and then he says, you know, she tells him she's gone straight and he says, I haven't. Uh-huh. And she's like, oh, you're on my side now. And her accent, you can tell she's like trying to decide where she wants to land with this British accent that she's using for them, especially this episode. And he's like, so are you in? And she doesn't ask, like, what's the job? Like, why? Yeah. Why have you turned bad? Like, she's just like, yeah, let's go. In.
Yeah.
And then he holds the door open for her in the car when they get in the car.
Yeah.
Oh, I love them. And then they get to have movie time. Hardison has all of the background info up on the screens and they're eating popcorn.
It's all iconic. Elliot's got a beer. There's orange soda on the table. Popcorn. Hardison's given the rundown and it's, you know, boom, boom, boom. It's all stuff that you will see episode after episode.
Yeah, it just feels like this is their entertainment. They're not, I mean, they're planning a new job, but they don't see it as a really kind of stressful, like we've got to focus and do all this stuff. Like they're like, oh yeah, this is fun. Yeah. Which in the commentary they mention, probably not in this episode. I think I watched the commentary for the whole season. That they're always eating in these scenes, which is just really telling for their characters and is just like a great introduction to how they approach their work, but also is really hard when you're filming because you have to still be eating in every take. I also love that Nate kind of just drops that he knows all this information about these planes.
Yeah, right.
And just everyone's like, what? And he says, oh, you pick things up.
Right.
You know, Nate drops all that plane knowledge on him and then he's musing about what they're gonna do. And he says, oh, Nigerians, I think. Like the Nigerians will work well, which leads you to think, okay, this episode's called The Nigerian Job. I know what the Nigerian scam is.
Right.
You know, and if you don't, like, have you not been paying attention to anything in the past 30 years? The Nigerian scam, of course, being you get an email from a Nigerian prince who needs some help moving some money out of the country. And if you can just give them a little bit to do this one thing, you'll get millions in reward, you know, but every so often they get back in touch with you and say, oh, you know, we just need a little bit more to get these bribes through customs and get these things. So you keep just giving a little more because what's a couple thousand dollars in the face of millions of dollars when you're done?
Right.
And then when it's actually, they've, you know, taken all your money from you, they disappear and you never get any of your money.
Right.
So then you're already thinking, oh, I know exactly how this con
is going to be some sort of internet thing.
Yeah. It's an internet thing. We all understand like, oh, this is going to be, I know exactly what they're going to do. So then they start and we get to see Sophie in her second role, I guess.
Her first grift.
Yeah, her first grift. And she's Anna Gunstadt.
Because
he calls her Gunstadt.
Yeah, right. And she's doing, you know, what I love is that she does that accent thing where you're like, I can always tell when somebody's from South Africa because if they say Africa.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Africa. It's that sort of flat A, which is great.
Yeah. And Gina Bellman is from New Zealand, which I thought she was just English, but she's Kiwi.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. So she's Anna and she represents like an African consortium of people who are trying to bring in more revenue and jobs for Africa. But I love like, he doesn't know that she's coming. Dubenich doesn't know that she's gonna be there. And then she just says, let's go talk outside. And then she just walks out.
Right.
And she kind of just glances over her shoulder and he's like fumbling and follows her out.
He's bait on legs, come on.
Right? Oh my gosh. So yeah, so they leave, which means that the rest of the crew can come in and Hardison gives that poor assistant the blue screen of death. And then we get Elliot, the IT guy.
Who's like,
I'm like, okay, like that's a nice flip on the script. I like that.
Yeah.
And Hardison's like, why can't I do this? I'm the actual computer guy.
Right.
Because I need you to do the actual computer guy stuff.
Right.
So Elliot gets his flirt on while fixing a computer and Parker steals information off Dubenich's computer and plants a bug. Nice.
With a nice blinky light.
Yes, blinky light. Which I don't, the first, you know, eight time. Well, the first time I watched it, you don't even think. You're like, oh, that light's there, so we know what it was that she she planted, and you don't think of beyond that. You're like, okay, now they've got this inside line on him.
You think it's the visual cue for us, the watcher.
Exactly, right. which is so good. And then Sophie's doing her whole con on Deep Bench, which is that she works for that company and they want to work on short haul, thank you, in South Africa and Nigeria. And she even drops like not Johannesburg, but like this smaller regional airport so that it's, you know, to lend authenticity to that. Mm-hmm. And then she plays into Dubenich's like pride and lets him know that she's manipulating him when he turns her down and she says, it's okay, I'll go to Pearson.
Right.
And they've just stolen the plans from. And he's like, I know what you're doing. She's like, yeah, I should hope so. I'm being pretty blatant about it. Right. But she's like being blatant and then not blatant. And it just works on so many different levels.
Right.
So she gets him to agree to a meeting and and then she just like walks off. He tries to shake her hand, but she's like, okay, I'll have my people call your people and just like pieces out. And then they have that scene where they meet up again at Hardison's like that evening, kind of before everything's going to go down. And you get this scene between Elliot and Nate where they're kind of having this heart to heart. And I like this about Elliot as well. He's the strong man. He's the hitter, but he's the most sensitive on the team.
Yeah, he's the most emotionally intelligent.
Yes.
And the best adjusted.
Yeah. Which you're like, this is a guy who beats people up for a living and makes a really good living out of it. But he's the one who points out that Nate looks a lot better than he did when they first started. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's because your brain knew that you're doing good guy stuff, even though we're doing bad guy stuff. But then he brings up Nate's son, and we get to find out why Dubenich was able to talk Nate into this job in the first place. And it's that the insurance company that Nate worked for refused to pay for treatment for his son, and his son died as a result.
Yes.
I'm guessing cancer, but
it's implied. They never say what it is, but yeah.
Yeah. But Nate not being as emotionally intelligent as Elliot or well-adjusted at all, just shuts it down.
Right.
He's like, you're not my friend. Like, don't talk to me like you are. And Elliot just takes a sip of his beer and he's like, yeah, because you have so many of those.
Right.
But then he gives him a heads up that Sophie's coming.
Right.
Like, heads up, you know, which is like, he's leaving and he's just said, yeah, I'm not your friend. You don't have a lot of friends, but now I'm going to do this kind of friendly thing for you.
By the way, it's quasi-girlfriend, 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Brace yourself. Yeah. And Sophie comes over and is like, can you put my earpiece in? And then she's
flirty. And yeah.
I know. And she like doesn't even move her hair out of the way. So he has to do it really.
Mm-hmm. And then he moves it out of the way and he tucks the earbud in and then he moves the hair back.
I know. And then she's like, I guess you really are in my head this time. Mm. And she just walks off and he's just standing there. And then Hardison like rolls by and
in
like,
his office Ooh. Chair. Yep.
Yep. Which was also completely improvised.
Yeah. John Rogers once said that they learned early on that if they just left the camera rolling, that Aldous Hodge would just put the button on scene.
Yeah.
He'd just come up with something.
And I love that. He's so good. And they, in the commentary, they're like, yeah, he was only like 21. He was like a kid. And he was just so good. And this was like his first really big job. Like, starring role.
He'd been on Friday Night Lights as a limited.
Yes, that's right. He was, gosh.
He was a quarterback.
Yeah, that who would come over after Katrina. Which, of course, I watched Friday Night Lights after I'd watched Leverage, and so I was like, Hardison!
And he's such a different character.
Like you. And then, you know, he's in Straight Outta Compton, which is, again, a very different character. And he was in Hidden Figures.
Yes, he was.
And then he was in Underground. Yep. And he's in an episode of Blacklist this last season, which I'm not caught up, so I'm very excited about that. I want him to be in all the things.
He should be in all the things, yes.
So, but I don't know if he could ever be another character like Aldous, or as like Alec Hardison, because that's just so perfect. Okay, so then they get to go to the day of the meeting with the Nigerians and Dubenich, which... Domenech gets there a little early and Sophie's not quite ready for him. So they scramble to get everything in place. And Elliot's still putting up the sign to fake the offices. And Sophie's way upstairs. And if Domenech comes in and checks the registry for the building, he's going to find that they're not there because these are not really offices. So Nate distracts everybody by busting some windows in this downtown Chicago street. And he just like walks off.
Right.
Like he has a baton in his pocket, like you do. Yeah. And then he busts some windows, including a minivan. I was like, come on, man, like that minivan. How are they going to get that fixed? Hopefully insurance will cover it.
Yeah.
Just a mom who went to drop somebody off. It's going to come back. And then Parker takes Sophie all the way down from the 10th floor to the ground floor with a zip line down the stairwell, which is just perfect. And that's really the first time you see Parker and Sophie interact.
Right.
Which is really cool knowing how their relationship progresses through the series as well.
Yeah. Because they're really kind of, they have a sort of a sisterly vibe from the get-go. With Parker kind of the sort of off-kilter, slightly mischievous little sister and Sophie being the sort of more...
Established. And also like a little annoyed as someone with younger sisters. Like there's a line later. She's like, what is wrong with you? But it's not said in a super judgmental way. Like
she's more puzzled, I think. By
So she shows up and shows Domenech back up to the office and tells him, you know, just so you know, like the way that we work is they're going to expect some compensation for working with you. And he's like, oh, not a bribe though. She's like, oh, of course not.
Have a friend.
Yes. So I thought that was interesting. Like when the meeting starts, you don't really hear them talking because that's unnecessary. But then she's like, oh, that thing that we talked about. And then she takes from the Nigerian an envelope and gives it to Domenech. And I just think it's weird that Domenech should be like, yes, I'm going to get like this note that says how much I'm supposed to offer as a bribe. Like that seems very explicit, but it works for this scene because he's like, okay, I'm going to give you $1 million so that we can have this contract to like sell you our plans so you can build planes in Nigeria. And, you know, they kind of walk out and they're all happy about that. But then the very next scene is that Domenech is back in his office with his like head engineer, I guess, who's like, this is a horrible idea. Why are you doing this? And he shows him that he's found the bug.
Right.
Like he knows, and he has a picture of Sophie with Nate. He knows that she's part of this. And he even says, I understand. I screwed them over. Like, of course they want to screw me over back, but I'm not going to let them. Like, I'm not an idiot.
Right.
They even chose Nigerians. Like, who do they think they're messing with? Like, I'm Victor Domenech. So he sets it up so that because they've got the shareholders meeting that next day, I guess, when Sophie brings the Nigerians to the party afterward, he's like, all right, let's go. Let's get this deal done so we can announce it. And Sophie shows like some hesitance. She's like, oh, are you sure you really want to do that? Which is great. And he takes it away. Yeah. But you don't realize, you're like, oh my gosh, Sophie, no, he knows.
All going pear-shaped. Ah.
Yeah. And he takes him into the conference room and the FBI pounces,
but
on Domenech and not on the Nigerians.
The Nigerians are working with the FBI.
Exactly. And he's like, no, I called and talked to Agent Higgins. And the guy's like, I'm Agent Higgins. And he's like, these are foreign nationals that you took bribe money from. And he's like, no, these aren't, they're not even Nigerians. And he's like, yeah, we are.
Yeah. And the brilliant thing about this, and again, John Rogers wrote, I think I sent you a link to his blog where he talked about how this episode hinges on everybody being exactly who they say they are, which is like the opposite of, like he said, he didn't want it to be the Sting. He didn't want to have a lot of people who were not usually, a lot of people who were acting essentially. Mm-hmm. Nobody except Sophie is acting in this scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, because then you see the reveal that she'd told the Nigerians that she worked for Victor Jubenich.
Right.
And that they were meeting at one of his other offices. Mm-hmm. And the Nigerians were the ones who gave a money order check to Jubenich, but she switches out the envelopes on her way back to Jubenich. And he's realizing it as he's making all of these excuses. You know, he's like, the Nigerian's like, your girl told us to meet you. And he's like, she's not my girl, Anna. And she's gone.
The thing is, he says, she's not my girl. And then he's hollering for her as if. Yeah. She is his employee.
By her first name and everything. And she's already, you know, peaced out. And, you know, he immediately like runs off. And I'm like, why are they not putting this man in handcuffs? Because I kept expecting him also just to like make a run for it. But he goes downstairs and he's trying to like, I guess he wants to calm the shareholders. And they're like, what's going on? And then the FBI guy comes and asks if anybody else has taken bribes.
Right.
Because that's something everyone's going to be like, oh
yeah.
And then, you know, he realizes he needs to go and take care of some other files. And he, like, introduces the Nigerians to that shareholder he talked to earlier.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and then he does this great thing where he kind of, like, moves in this, like, really sinuous way. And he's like, I'll be right back. And he just, like.
Very subtle.
It just ducks out. And you know, they're like, we gotta get rid of these files. And they're throwing, they're like shredding files. Oh, and the FBI agent says that he can take whatever he wants, including his underpants if he needs to, because of the Patriot Act, because they have government contracts.
Right.
And
also the Foreign Corrupt Procedures Act is a thing.
Exactly, yes. Which is in that blog post. And you know, they're throwing these shredded documents out the window, which in the commentary they're like, so in office buildings the windows don't open.
No, they don't.
so you see these people throwing paper out, but they're not actually throwing it out the window. And then you see the paper falling down, but it's really just someone standing on a ladder out of the camera shot, just like throwing paper.
Of course, yes.
Which is great. And then in the chaos of all the FBI agents and all of the ticker tape parade of shredded files, you see the crew come out wearing FBI windbreakers and holding boxes of files and hard drives and with these smirks on their faces.
Yep.
That's so good. And then it cuts to Nate having another meeting in an empty building that, spoiler, doesn't blow up, with the guy from Pearson. And he hands back the hard drives with all the information, and the guy from Pearson agrees not to press charges on him or any of his people. And he's like, okay, that's cool. And then he goes to leave, and the guy asks, don't you want any money? And he says, like, one of the best lines that they always use, they're like, oh, you know, we had an alternate revenue stream for this.
Yes.
Which is and the you stock find out. Market,
which is the stock market.
Yes.
They shorted the crap out of Bering, which is so funny because it's like Boeing. Yeah, we know.
Yeah.
And yes, you know, as I know, it sounds like I've done all the things, but I did used to work for the Nasdaq stock market back.
Of course, you did.
Yeah, right. But it is indeed true. I mean, one of the things that is true about shorting a stock is you can make a lot of money very fast if it falls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like how early in, I guess. He knew that they were going to do that part of it from the get-go because he says, you know, oh, you've got your balls tied to your shareholder meeting and your stock prices, mm-hmm. like it's a cement block or a cinder block or something.
Yes.
So they were going to plan that from the very get-go. And I think the first time I watched this, it was back in 2008, and I didn't know a lot about the stock market. Like, I hadn't read The Big Short yet.
Well, and the stock market in 2008 was in the can.
Yeah.
The whole stock market thing rang very, very true.
Good. I mean, not good, but I like that. That was, I mean, it's a topical thing, and that the fact that it did seem plausible and it was realistic.
Yeah.
Is again, like one of those, you know, the black box versus the ledger thing. Like, oh yeah, like you could stand to make that astronomical number that ends up on their checks that blows. I love this. It blows all of them away.
Right. Like these are very successful thieves, right?
Yes, who've stolen Monet's, and like Parker drops that, like, oh, I haven't used this rig since I stole the Bengal ruby or whatever. And like they have all of these stories and they've stolen all these amazingly, fabulously expensive things. But even there, like, literally, like, a couple of them take a step back because there's so much money. And Hardison says, like, this is retire and buy an island.
Right.
Rich. Like, this is the last job we ever have to do.
Later on, we'll also see that Sophie has got, like, a storage unit full of priceless objets, you know?
is that Sophie or is that Parker?
Well, Parker might too, but Sophie definitely has, like...
I mean, Parker just has, like a creepy warehouse.
And Parker doesn't like things. Parker likes money.
Yeah, that's true.
Sophie likes things.
She really does. And she's got, like, all sorts of little... And, you know, they have the money to have bolt holes all over the world.
Right.
Which, oh my gosh. If I could have a lot of money, that's what I'd have. Just bolt holes all over the world. Not big places, just, like, little...
Yeah, little getaways.
Very, like, Sherlock Holmes thing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they do that thing again. So they've met again, this time in a park. But this time it's during the day. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, at the end of the first heist, it's dark. And they're like, we're never going to see each other again. Like, we don't even care about each other. We're still kind of at odds, even though we worked, like... magic together.
Right.
And this time it's still day. It's almost magic hour. And they all say, you know, this is a one-time thing. I've forgotten your names already, but none of them mean it at all.
Right.
And they do their dispersal thing and it follows Nate. And then they one by one.
Yeah. Like
pop back into frame.
Most amazing. Let's do this some more. Let's do it again.
Yeah. And like Hardison's like, yeah, it's, I can't pay attention to things for very long. Like basically like I have ADD and you kept me focused and interested. Mm-hmm. And then Parker shows up with the, you know, like I'm really good at my thing, but there are other things and I'm not just going to stop doing my thing. Right. I need your help. And then you get Elliot being the emotionally intelligent one. Like we've said before, he's like, my question is, how long is it going to be until you are like a wreck again? Like you need this. Like right. If you don't have something keeping you occupied, you're going to fall apart.
Right.
And Nate just scoff.
Right.
And then he gets a call and it's just Sophie sitting there on the bench, and her legs.
Yeah, that's right.
And then that look and she's like, you choose the jobs. And that's like all she says. And
right.
He says, you know, I'm a good guy. And she's like, well, then choose the bad guys.
Yeah.
Be the White Knight and the Black King.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just switches from that, like, go find some bad guys, to that, what will now be, like, the beginning of every episode, basically, where they're talking to a distraught person
right.
who's been screwed over. And, you know, Nate has his, like, that quintessential line, like, you know, you're being crushed by this weight of this company who can make you go away and we provide leverage. And then like everyone's standing menacingly behind him.
Right. And he's always got that little pause. We provide leverage.
And he's got this like mob boss suit on with like the white cuffs and like the stripes and the white collar. And you're just like, oh yeah, you have so much money right now. And they again say, they're like, we can't pay you. And Sophie says, you know, we work on an alternative revenue stream. Which I'm like, which is nothing. Like, you don't need another revenue stream. Yeah, and that's the end of the first episode, which I don't even remember how I decided to start watching it. 2008.
I don't really either. I think I saw some of the marketing materials and I was like, well, I'll pop that in the TiVo and see what's what. And the, like yeah. I said, I just ended up watching it over and over and over again because it's like you said, it's a cinematic. It's this little movie that sits on its own and yet also teases you and you want to see more of these characters. You want to find out more. You want to see them do other interesting things and do them very well.
And each one is satisfying on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of shows where you have to watch the whole series to like understand, like you couldn't just pick up an episode.
Right.
But I think if someone like walked in, like you would get the idea, especially in the early seasons when they're still not working together really well. Or
right.
like they're working together really well, but they're resistant to that.
Right.
But you could pick that up. I don't think you'd get as much out of it, but you wouldn't be completely lost. Or if you picked up, you know, season 3 of other shows, you would know who these people are. I do remember, and I want to talk to you about acting and things, but the first time that I watched it, I loved.
How long is this so far?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I can edit it down. People can speed us up, so we'll talk really fast. It's okay. But we should wrap it up. But I remember the first time that I watched it, I really loved, begrudgingly loved Timothy Hutton's character. Immediately loved Sophie. Immediately was in love with Alec Hardison. It took me a minute to get into Elliot because I still knew Christian Kane from Angel. Mm-hmm. He was also in Friday Night Lights, but he was in the movie.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was primed to like Elliot from the get-go because I just love, I love that grumpy good guy.
Yeah.
It's a character trope I just I'm a sucker for.
I think because in this first season, he has Keith Urban hair.
He
when
does.
He grows it out a little longer, then I was much more on board.
Oh, see, I when he had super long hair, I was just like, it wasn't for me. It's,
I like the tall, lanky computer nerd guy who makes Doctor Who references. That's my bread and butter.
Absolutely. That's trust me. Yeah. There's more than one type of guy that you know.
That's true. Fantastic. There are options.
Grumpy good guys and lanky nerds, yes, are both totally in my wheelhouse.
However, I did not like Parker. First time I watched this, I liked parts of Parker, and there are parts even rewatching it now for the umpteenth time, that there were beats to her character that I think Beth Rees Graff changed later to keep the elements of Parker kind of being out of touch with how to interact with people, but less obvious about it. There were just parts where I'm just okay, she's doing this too much. Where she, when she kind of does her smile thing, looks away, it just for some reason really bothered me. And I don't know if that's some internalized misogyny that I was carrying, 2008 Christina, not fully actualized, or what, but there are parts that I'm still ugh. But then I kept watching, and every episode I loved Parker more and more, not just liked her, but loved her more and more.
Well, yeah. I mean, she's a character that, how do I put this? She's kind of becomes a family member. You can't, it's not you decide to like her. You just kind of have to.
Yes.
Because, and then you just do. That was the take.
Except those weird quirks and idiosyncrasies. You're just that's Parker.
Exactly. And then when, later on in various episodes, but she's I did it and I didn't stab anybody.
Yes. That's great. New tradition, no stabbing Wednesday.
Totally agree. Yeah. Things that most people get through their entire lives without.
Yeah.
So she becomes kind of, I think as a viewer, I mean, of course, not everybody reacts to a character the same way. But as a viewer, what happened was that I don't think I had the same negative reaction to her that you did. But I didn't know what to make of her at first. And then you start to get used to her quirks and idiosyncrasies. And you also see her through the lens of Hardison, who accepts her and adores her from pretty much the moment he meets her. And because we love and adore Hardison so much, I think that also kind of cracks your heart open a little bit.
Yeah.
On the Parker end of things.
That's true.
And then you see her learning and growing so much. I mean, I think the episode where if people are on the fence about Parker, that they actually tip over from being on the fence into falling in love with Parker is the juror job.
Mm-hmm. That's when she has to test out those training wheels. The training wheels come off and she's got to go interact with real people and act like a real person.
And she makes friends and she's outside of the crew. And she's so kind of she doesn't know what to do with herself at that point, but it's very dear and it feels very, very genuine.
Yeah.
So I think that was when I really tipped over the one with the orphanage.
And that is the second or third episode.
Yeah.
They do that. And I think that's what really helped was that you almost immediately you find out, even though you have that that flashback to her in like an abusive household as a kid, you're already finding out more about her and like why she might act like this, like why she has this cold like shell around any real feelings that she may or may not have, which I think is really good. And it does, like, her development is not a litmus test, but it's kind of like you see it go along the timeline of the show, like as they become this found family together, you see her grow.
Right.
And she's kind of, she's like the measuring mark of that.
Yeah. Well, she's the one in terms of personality, I think, who grows the most and goes the farthest.
Besides like Nate, probably.
Well, Nate tends to circle a lot.
Yes.
He's better and worse. And his relationship with Sophie develops, but she goes really far. He does develop and he does get better. I always love how John Rogers would always say, don't forget, Nate is not a nice man.
Yeah. He's a good man, but he's not a nice man, which is very much like later, you know, we've got BBC Sherlock, like mm-hmm. he's a great man. And maybe one day, if we're very lucky, mm-hmm. he'll be a good man.
Right.
Yeah. He's not a nice guy, but I do like that about Nate, is that, because that's real life, right? Like you can get better, but you have like setbacks and you're not going to be better all the time. And I think it's also just really true in keeping with his alcoholism and his grieving and mm-hmm. the way that he copes with the things that have happened in his life.
Yeah.
Because there are times that I'm like, yeah, like, you know, he needs a drink. That guy deserves a drink. That's the only way he can function. And then I'm like, that's not healthy. Like, he shouldn't do that. And I think the team does that too. Like the team is, you know, oh yeah, if he's, you know, hungover, he's not doing his job to his full potential. But also like, we care about you and this is unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
It is.
So good. All right. Any last thoughts?
I think I've said all of my thoughts. I think. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I was going to do a quick, I need like a pithy saying, like an alliterative thing, like saying for this other thing that I want to do. So I want to end every episode with a recommendation for a book that has a heist in it.
Oh.
And I can't think of a title for it. So if you think of one, let me know. Anybody else who happens to listen to this, write in. We could wait until the next episode to officially name it, to give it a little time. So the first book that I wanted to talk about is actually part of a series. It's called The Gentleman Bastard series by Scott Lynch. The first book is The Lies of Locke Lamora. And these, when I do reader advisory at my job, I don't suggest this book for most of the people patrons that I work with, because I'm a children's librarian. Right. And these books I describe as Lord of the Rings meets Ocean 11, meets all of the swearing that you would find in a Christopher Moore book. with sharks. And they, just like in Leverage, there's lots of like jumping back and forth in the timeline to set things up for the plot later on. So it's a high fantasy heist novel. And it is so good. The characters and the world are so well fleshed out that when things happen at the very end of each book, like you're just gutted, like you're just sobbing. So if that's not your cup of tea, don't do that, but well, it should be, because it is so worth it.
Well, I can actually also recommend a heist story, now that I'm thinking of it.
Okay.
That would be Cat Sebastian's The Lawrence Brown Affair.
Ooh, I'm gonna write this down so I don't forget it.
Yes.
Cat Sebastian, like cat, like C-A-T?
C-A-T, yes. Her name is Cat Sebastian. And this is a love story between two men in Regency England, I believe it was set. And you're making that, what?
I'm like, how do I not know this exists?
Oh, and Kat is also a wonderful follow on Twitter if you do not follow her.
Ooh, I will put her, I'm guessing Kat is her.
Kat is her, yes. And And so this is a fantastic story where this young grifter thief has to get the hell out of Dodge, aka London, because some mob types are after him, and he goes off to try to swindle this guy in this crumbling castle and ends up falling in love with him instead.
As you do. My gosh, that sounds wonderful. I'm going to go read that immediately. All right. So, Adele, where can people find you, follow you? Pre-order your books whenever they are announced.
When and if my books ever
When?
So I am on Twitter at it's at underscore Adele Bach. And I do have the URL adelebach.com. I don't blog very often, but you know, I have my website for when the books exist as printed things. And I also am on Instagram, also at underscore Adele Bach. If you like things like cats and the occasional food photo, and then there's a whole glut of photographs. I recently went to Norway to visit.
Those were
visit the motherland. My grandmother's from Norway, and so there were lots of pictures of southern Norway there for quite a while. So
it was nice. And again, I'm Christina. You can follow me on Twitter at LibrarianStee. Stee is STI, which is short for Christina. Yeah, if you want to hear more about book-related things, I have a BookTube channel. My channel is Reading Rainbow Hair. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back again to talk about the second episode, whose title I cannot remember right now. All right, maybe next time I will have come up with a catchy phrase to end on, but for now, we'll say thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.